Hello, it is Monday, July 6th. Welcome to Korea 24. I'm your host, Andrew Jung. South Korea's $1 exchange market began round-the-clock operations on weekdays, starting today. More on that in today's news briefing. In our in-depth news analysis segment, we will be talking not about the World Cup, but about RoboCup, which for the first time featured a full 11-on-11 humanoid football game. Plus, in our weekly sports roundup, we will preview the coming week in KBO baseball and some K-League and international basketball action. All that and more on Korea 24. South Korea's $1 exchange market has begun operating around the clock on weekdays. The finance minister marked the occasion with a visit to a dealing room at a bank in Seoul on Monday morning and pledged to continue improving foreign investors' access to the country's financial markets. For more on the expansion and other major headlines of the day, we have in the studio with us Deputy Editor-in-Chief of KBS World's English News Service, Kim In-kyung. Hello, In-kyung.
Hello, Andrew.
What are the new trading hours for the $1 exchange market, and are other currencies affected?
As of Monday morning, the market operates 24 hours a day on all weekdays, including South Korean public holidays. Trading will only pause on weekends and New Year's Day. When New York City shifts from Eastern Daylight Time to Eastern Standard Time, the market in South Korea will run from 7 a.m. Monday to 7 a.m. Saturday. Until last week, $1 forex transactions could only take place from 9 a.m. every business day until 2 a.m. the next day. That was a further expansion from the traditional trading hours of between 9 a.m. and 3:30 p.m., which was in place until mid-2024. This change is exclusive to the U.S. dollar. Trading in all other currencies remains unchanged and will continue to take place between 9 a.m. and 3:30 p.m.
And why did the South Korean government extend the trading hours?
The move is part of the government's efforts to improve foreign investors' access to the country's financial markets. When foreign investors want to buy Korean stocks or bonds, they need to swap their dollars for Korean won first. Because $1 trading hours were restricted in the past, it was hard for them to invest in the Korean market right when they wanted to. South Korea also hopes this extension will pave the way for its inclusion in the MSCI Developed Markets Index. In its recent annual market classification review, MSCI cited restrictions on won convertibility as a key reason for keeping South Korea on its emerging markets index.
Turning to sports news, in the fallout from South Korea's early exit from the 2026 FIFA World Cup, Jung Mong-gyu, president of the Korea Football Association, is stepping down after serving as head of the organization for nearly 13 and a half years. In-kyung, can you explain?
Sure. Jung announced his resignation on Monday after holding a final executive meeting with vice presidents and board members at the KFA's headquarters in Cheonan. He was initially expected to resign after the closing of the World Cup, but is believed to have moved up his departure date in an effort to quell anger and controversy surrounding the KFA following South Korea's group stage collapse. Jung has been credited with contributing to the construction of the Korea Football Park National Training Facility in Cheonan, advancing the multi-division league system and securing financial stability for the KFA. But he also faced controversy and tough criticism for alleged procedural flaws in hiring national team coaches and attempts to pardon match-fixing players.
I think it's safe to say he's going to have a mixed legacy. What is the next step for the KFA, and how much time does it have to find his permanent replacement?
With Jung's resignation, the KFA will appoint one of its vice presidents as acting president, who must be approved by the Korean Sport and Olympic Committee. The association has 60 days to elect a new chairman.
Meanwhile, a new organization has been launched to overhaul South Korean football in the wake of growing demands for systemic reform following the national team's lackluster World Cup performance. In-kyung, can you tell us about the organization?
Sure. The K-Football Innovation Committee officially launched operations on Monday. The provisional body is tasked with identifying key reforms to enhance the future competitiveness of South Korean football, including K-Football governance, the development of young players, and the introduction of advanced technology. South Korean football legend Park Ji-seong and National Olympic chief Yoo Seung-min will co-chair the committee, which will also include former national team players Lee Young-pyo and Park Ju-ho.
In other headlines, President Lee Jae-myung held a meeting with senior government officials and top executives of Samsung Electronics and SK Hynix to discuss follow-up measures for his administration's large-scale investment initiative focused on semiconductors, physical artificial intelligence, and AI data centers. What did the president say?
He urged officials to speed up the project to develop new growth engines. To achieve this, he called for eliminating regulatory hurdles by streamlining environmental impact assessments and completing administrative procedures simultaneously rather than sequentially. He also instructed officials to preemptively prepare electricity and water infrastructure for the projects.
And why is the main opposition party criticizing this initiative?
The People's Power Party accuses the president of arm-twisting businesses to invest astronomical sums in specific regions and awarding windfalls to the Democratic Party's most powerful regional bloc, voting bloc, ahead of the party's convention to elect its new leader. He dismissed these claims, calling on opponents to cooperate or get out of the way.
Following the meeting, the presidential office announced the location of a core pillar of the three mega projects. Where exactly will the semiconductor cluster in Jeolla province be located?
Presidential Chief of Staff Kang Hoon-sik said the semiconductor cluster will be built on the site of a military airbase in Gwangju. Kang said the site, which spans about 8.3 million square meters, is already level due to its use as an airfield, allowing construction time to be significantly reduced. He also said the location is close to downtown Gwangju and a KTX station offering advantages in workforce access, residential conditions, and logistics connectivity. Kang added that the government will complete the site selection process promptly after consultations with relevant ministries and begin follow-up procedures for developing the industrial complex.
In other news, the nation's four major oil refiners and a number of their employees are facing accusations of fixing prices after the Iran war broke out. Tell us more.
Sure. The Seoul Central District Prosecutor's Office said Monday that it has indicted SK Energy, GS Caltex, S-Oil and HD Hyundai Oil Bank under the Fair Trade Act. Three senior employees from HD Hyundai Oil Bank and one from GS Caltex will also stand trial in the case. The prosecution alleges that HD Hyundai Oil Bank and SK Energy colluded to raise prices and restrict competition, generating unfair gains worth an estimated 14.2 trillion won, or around 9.3 billion U.S. dollars. It accuses GS Caltex and S-Oil of following suit, bringing the combined total of alleged unfair gains for all four companies to 26 trillion won. Prosecutors say there's circumstantial evidence suggesting that employees from HD Hyundai Oil Bank and SK Energy exchanged price information even before the Iran war started.
And that's it for today's news briefing. Thank you, Inyo.
Thanks, Andrew.
This is Broadway actor Hwang Joo-min. Now you're listening to KBS World Radio.
South Korea recently faced disappointment from its premature World Cup exit, but the country has much to celebrate when it comes to the 2026 Robo Cup. From July 2nd to July 6th, Songdo Convencia in Incheon played host to Robo Cup 2026, the world's largest artificial intelligence and robotics competition. It was the first time it was held on Korean soil. It was also the biggest Robo Cup in the competition's history, with 364 teams, nearly 2,900 participants, representing 45 countries from around the globe. Robo Cup has been running every year since its inaugural event in Nagoya, Japan, back in 1997, with the goal of creating a robot team capable of outperforming the human champions of the actual World Cup. This year, robots competed in a full 11-on-11 match, a milestone moment not just for the tournament, but for the future of physical AI itself. Joining us from Incheon is the event's leader, Dr. Ubo Visser, president of the RoboCup Federation. He's here to give us a recap of the cup, which just had its closing ceremony a few hours ago. Dr. Visser, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon. I'm glad to be here.
We're glad to have you here. Tell us about what the RoboCup is and what it stands for.
Well, you can think about it as a landmark project. When in the 40s of the last century, people decided we are flying to the moon, it was a moonshot project that nobody thought is feasible. Something like this has also happened in the RoboCup community when in 1995, researchers decided, how about we're going to have a bold vision and say we're going to beat the world champion in human soccer with a team of fully autonomous humanoid robots. And that's something that was like outrageously bold to say. So it's a landmark project that we are trying to aim at, which in many, many decades, or at least in the last two decades, we said, okay, this might not happen. Now, the last 10 years have proven otherwise. The last 10 years with the emergence of those new humanoids worldwide and the development of AI has proven that this is going to be actually a goal rather than a vision.
Since you were there on the ground all week, if you could give us an overview of what happened this year, and as a scientist, was there anything that excited you a lot, especially with regards to the humanoids and AI that you were just talking about?
So let's start with the soccer. The soccer, we had a large restructuring process last year. We were, let's say, consolidating the soccer leagues to humanoid soccer mostly. And that was a large process by saying, okay, those now robots we are playing with for 20 plus years, they're kind of outdated. And the small kid size robots that we are playing with is also outdated. So we merged all of this, incorporated new humanoid platforms. And that took, of course, a toll on restructuring. We're also restructuring other areas of RoboCup. So we have an entire new league, or not entire other league, on RoboCup Rescue, where the goal is to help first responders in disaster scenarios, such as, you know, with all think about the earthquake that happened a couple of weeks ago in Venezuela. With artificial noses for smelling, with heat detectors, with all sorts of levels of autonomy and mobility, whether it would be dog-like or a robot with chains underneath or with wheels underneath, just to help responders at home. A scenario where we envision robots to actually help in our household, not only for the elderly. Can you imagine you have a situation where an elderly person can stay in their home maybe one or two more years longer with the help of a robot assist rather than going to an elderly home, which is quite costly without that. So it could be both an increase in comfort level for the humans, but also in decrease in costs on the healthcare system of a country. And in at home, especially this year, we have seen the first humanoid robots. We had four different humanoids in that league. It was a rocky start, if I might add, as a scientist. We see that they are the established teams that are non-humanoid are still the top favorites. But I can see humanoids working in a human-like environment. Why not using humanoids as well? Wouldn't everybody be happy if we have a robot who does all sorts of things in the household? Mm. And scientifically speaking, so number one is seeing those humanoids in at home was a milestone. But the milestone you mentioned in the beginning of the show, the 11 versus 11 is a real milestone. We have not seen this before. This is the first time ever we've seen 11 versus 11 humanoid, fully autonomous humanoid robots playing soccer against each other. That's something we are proud of. And it was remarkable how smooth it went. Mm. We have never tested that before. This is something, as a board of trustees asked the teams, can you make a demo 11 versus 11. The game controller wasn't even meant built for that. We had to change a lot of things overnight, and it was remarkable how well it went. So the self-adaptability of those robots, it is working. And I'm a little bit more confident that we can achieve our goal by 2050.
You were talking about this 11-on-11 robot football match just now. Who came out on top of that league, and what was the score, and which team manager's tactics had the upper hand?
That's a question, typical human question. I'm going to have to take the wind out of your sails here, because it was not about who is winning this game. This was a demo match where we took all robots we had on the field, and then there are two teams were orchestrating this. But it was not about competing who wins against whom. This is like, there are robots, were robots in there that, who were injured. It was also not something where I would say, oh, this particular team's strategy was dominant over the other team's strategy. You can't say that. This was simply a demo match to portray that it is possible to play in the first place. And we are happy that both teams, the team from Bremen in Germany, my old university, and also the team from Leipzig in Germany, were able to do this. And we also have to say thank you to Booster Robotics, who made this possible, that we have enough platforms to play with.
You mentioned a rocky start. What were the biggest challenges the robots ran into during the competition?
Humanoids, especially large humanoids. We had two middle-sized robots, sort of like up to 140 centimeters, or we call them teen size, and two larger size. My team was one of them. We had a larger size robot, adult size, about 6 feet or 1.80 meters tall. And they have a different dynamics. They also have a different center of mass, meaning if the control is not 100%, a fall is very likely. And if a fall is, if they are falling, they are falling. It is much, much tougher. The main problem was that we just got them out of the production a few weeks ago. So it's not fully fledged. Software is not fully fledged there. Our problems we had with some network inside, which is a typical problem that you have on site, that in a hall with 220 Wi-Fis, you might get some connection issues. But we were localized. We could plan our path, so we could just walk and navigate. Other teams had problems with vision. We had a very, very bright floor and white walls. And if you don't have a LiDAR system that's with you, you might get into localization problems. And that's what the team had. But also due to the fact that the LiDAR didn't come in time and they couldn't put it on. We will see something different next year. So I'm happy to see it was a rocky start, yes, but I'm happy to see that we had the first move. And there was one team from Japan, Team Erasers, who did quite well, although we couldn't reach the performance of those that were on the top of the field last year's.
Mm. You mentioned this as well earlier. The Federation's ultimate and audacious goal is to field a robot team that can defeat an actual human World Cup champion team by 2050. You express confidence. When do you expect this to happen, and what needs to be done to reach this goal?
What you need to assume here is that funding provided, nobody can develop any innovation if research labs around the globe are not funded properly. And we see this in various countries that there are limited funding resources, or funding resources are decreased, and that's definitely not a good sign. Other countries are fine. Now, let's say, assuming that the funding the resources are there, and we produce enough talent and dedicated researchers to do so, we can see a dramatic increase of performance in the coming years. I don't know whether you had the chance to look at the T2 robot from Booster. They showed a demo here at the RoboCup with a shot that was incredible. Huh. If we would see those robots next year on the pitch, for example, then I can guarantee you we will see different dynamics. Now, that said, if now the frequency of new platforms is getting faster and faster, this would also require that the teams around the world would be able to purchase those new equipments by year. And that's not necessarily the case. No university allows a researcher to purchase a team of fully-fledged humanoid robots to buy every year. You know, that's where a dream also hits reality sometimes, where you think, okay, I bought a large humanoid this year. I might not be able to do so next year, even though that platform is much better. That's the one part. The other part is the massive increase in performance in AI tools and systems that we have to our at our disposal. It is incredible that we all know, and it will now go into physical AI, meaning that those tools we can use learn new motions to control very complex machines, and we will see that more and more complex tasks will be able to solve appropriately. So I think if you take this into account, you will not get a year out of me of when we will be ready. But given the fact, or assuming that we have the funding resources, enough talent, and the ability to purchase new hardware platforms in regular, maybe every other year or every a few years, we would be able to do that to achieve our goal.
So funding, talent, and the ability to match the frequency of changes to platforms. You mentioned that beyond football, other capabilities included rescue, helping out at home. What of those capabilities did you find surprising? Can you walk us through a few concrete examples that stood out to you?
What stood out in rescue, for example, is the overall performance of all teams increased drastically. People from NIST, the National Institute of Standards and Technology from the USA, who are running the RoboCup rescue, informed me from the get-go, this year is going to be different because we've seen really performance increase by all teams. He didn't know at that time what it was. I don't have the answer to this. Maybe it was the increase of AI and physical embodiment that made the jump. Definitely there is the hardware issue that more sensor technology came out, more hardware technology came out, people adapting to this as well. So maybe it's a combination of both. In the rescue scenario, manipulation, navigation, making your own map is a big deal. And what stood out technically with a concrete example would be that the level of sophistication in SLAM technology comes to mind. SLAM is self-localization and mapping, where in an unknown territory, you have to find your way by creating your own map. And then you're creating areas where, as an autonomous robot, you're creating areas where you think this is a safe passage, and there are areas where you mark them as unsafe or medium safe passages. And that depends on the, whatever territory you are finding. And the territory is changing daily. So you have to do this multiple times. In at home, what struck me is the level of sophistication of one team from South Korea. I'm happy to report Tidy Boy. They are they created a new robot in the last year already. It's a non-humanoid, but it's a very sophisticated machine, and they showed their talent, and they were best in class, so to say. You know, whether it's pouring milk or identifying objects, the typical pick-and-place task, they can have it all. What I still miss in at home is the level of sophistication in human-robot interaction. Something where we have one task where, and we call it the receptionist, where a robot greets a guest to come in, asks the guest's name, asks the favorite drink, then asks the guest to come into the living room and points to an empty seat. It's something like, why don't you sit down to the right of the person with the red shirt? And of course, these people are changing all the time, so the robot needs to describe where the guest has to sit. And then what I miss, especially in those humanoids, is that there's a gesture that comes with it, something where, you know, an arm shows the guest in, an arm shows something. And we are in love with functionality, our engineers, but sometimes I miss that component. I think that's something that we need to do in the coming years, more human in the loop and appropriate behavior with the human in the room with a robot.
You've just mentioned what robot tech could be lacking, but as not only the president of RoboCup, but also the professor of computer science in the computer science department at the University of Miami, how would you assess where the technology actually stands today? And looking a few years ahead, how do you expect physical AI to start showing up in our everyday lives?
Yeah, good question. So on one hand, we see the sophistication of AI algorithms entering in our various days, various processes in our lives. And that's the same case in computer science. We have undergraduate students now who can complete tasks and assignments that they probably couldn't complete or that they could not complete a few years ago. So that changes the perspective, and also it's a total game changer, which means you can put more assignments or more complex assignments for less experienced students. That raises a whole bunch of questions about curriculum and what we're going to teach. But it also increases the likelihood that physical AI becomes more realistic in our daily lives. Something like, we all have already know those recommender systems that we have. You are switching on Netflix or whatever streaming channel you may choose. And based on what you have seen and based on your preferences, there are algorithms in the background that learn that you might like a particular show and then offer this to you. This is done on YouTube. It depends on how good the quality of the video is. It depends on whether you're watching the video to the end, and you get the algorithm picks up on this and then serves more of the same to you. So this is all there already. What we don't have yet is robots in our homes. I mean, we see companies who are working on this. I know that Amazon is very interested in this, although they don't really have a physical platform yet. We know that Toyota is working on this for at least a decade or more. We have one of the Toyota human support robots in our lab, actually two in my lab, and they are meant for this particular case. What I do see in a tremendous opportunity for healthcare robots, just doing chores in a hospital. We hear from healthcare experts that 70-80% of the tasks that are being done by qualified personnel in a hospital is unqualified work, or work that does not require a qualified person. Just something like transport item A from one place to another, or make sure that there are always sheets, clean something. Those things don't have to be done by humans. They can be done by intelligent artifacts. It could be a robot. It could be, you know, whatever you call it. Something that is mobile and does the task without without taking away a people's job. So that the qualified personnel can do what they are supposed to do and what they are paid for. because that sometimes people have to do things that they could have been done by somebody else. That's what we hear, and we probably will see those robots. We all see robots in hotel rooms and restaurants already delivering. Delivery is probably the easiest. We have we see autonomous car driving around, and it's just the beginning. But that's we will see more and more. So for the future, I see there will be more and more coming. What we still don't know yet is how the society is embracing those new artifacts, and do we need to communicate to society what we believe can be quite useful in an improvement. There's also the danger in at hand, of course, and some people in society believe that robots take over their jobs, and we're going to have to address this too.
We're going to shift gears back to RoboCup. Intun is now passing the torch to Nuremberg for next year's RoboCup. And as Federation President, what do you think will already be possible by then? And beyond that, what's the RoboCup Fed's long-term goal?
Let me start with Nuremberg and go back to the healthcare, because we will have a specific demo on healthcare in Nuremberg. There have been engineers from Siemens proposing a new healthcare demo for physical robots, sort of like an at-home scenario, but in a hospital setting with additional specific tasks. And it's going to be run as a demo. They're inviting teams from all over the world, and that's something that we're going to see new. Also, we will likely see new robots with extreme good soccer playing skills, meaning mobility in walking and also shooting. We are seriously thinking about a safety, and I have to address a safety issue, because if those robots are coming with speed and you know, getting out of bounds, so to say, we no longer can have humans sitting there, because these are fast, heavy robots that can harm people. So we need to address this issue. This is getting to that point. But the exciting part is we will see better soccer games. And at home, we will definitely see more humanoids, and we'll see more better prepared humanoids. In at rescue, that's one thing I'm planning. They are asking for humanoids in the rescue arena for many, many years, and nobody dares to try, because it is extremely difficult to walk on 2 feet area of full of rubbles. That's something maybe we can start thinking about it, and maybe we have one demo with teams who dare to see whether it's possible. I wish we could see that. And then there's the new smart manufacturing league that took off this year, a conglomerate between the former at work and logistics league, where we're trying to address the factories of tomorrow and how robots and humans can collaborate in a work environment. And that's I think we are on a good path to see something very exciting next year. I mean, we came with the goal in the beginning of it. We want to win against the world champion by the year 2050, and we're on a good path.
Well, full of possibilities, including, of course, 2050. Looking forward to humanoids defeating humans. But that was Professor Ubo Visser, the Federation head of the RoboCup competition, which was held at Intun this year. Sir, thank you for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Welcome to the Korea 24 stock market update. The benchmark Korea Composite Stock Price Index dipped 37.01 points, or 0.46%, on Monday to close at 8,051.33. The tech-heavy KOSDAQ lost 21.34 points, or 2.46%, to close at 847.07. You can check Korean stock market updates at world.kbs.co.kr.
Next, we are joined by Daniel Che for our Korea Trending segment. For this part of the show, we check out some of the most viewed stories and issues covered by Korean news outlets handpicked by the Korea 24 team. Hello, Daniel.
Hello, Andrew.
What's our first story?
Well, starting Monday, Koreans must brace themselves to get ready to undergo stricter identification verification when activating new mobile phones.
I didn't know that rhymed. But how much strictness are we talking about?
According to the Ministry of Science and ICT, on Monday, the government has introduced stricter verification requirements, meaning an identification card alone not sufficient enough for new subscriptions or carrier transfers. South Korea's three major mobile carriers and mobile virtual network operators began implementing enhanced multi-factor identity verification procedures across all in-person and online sales channels.
So under the new rules, what do we need other than our IDs?
So customers applying for a new mobile subscription or switching carriers while keeping their existing phone number must verify identity using one of three methods: facial recognition, a government-issued mobile ID, or a certified copy of their resident registration record issued the same day.
And why are these changes taking place?
Well, the measure is intended to prevent fraudulent mobile service activations using stolen identities and to curb the use of burner phones in crimes such as voice phishing. The requirements do not apply to customers replacing only their handset while remaining with the same carrier.
You know, I like the intent, but I'm not too confident that these measures will meaningfully reduce the types of crimes that you mentioned. But now to our second story. Dan, what do you have?
Unlike last year, South Korea is not seeing a massive number of love bugs in various parts of the nation. But there's a new nuisance that seems set to serve as substitutes, brown candidates.
And what are these new insects that I've never heard of?
So the scientific name is Paralanticus eucerensis. They are native to Korea, actually, and can grow up to 4 centimeters, brown or dark brown bodies, strong hind legs that allows them to jump really high. It's easy to mistake them for camel crickets because at a glance, they do appear very similar.
I think I've seen them before near my home. There did seem to be a lot of those bugs, but are they classified as pests?
When their numbers rise sharply, they can damage crops and are classified as outbreak pests. Experts say people should avoid touching or trying to catch them, as brown candidates have strong jaws and can bite if handled or provoked.
I didn't know they could bite. Where have these insects been mostly spotted recently?
Recently, there's been a growing number of complaints from residents in Seoul and nearby cities. They've been spotted in large numbers around Manburam and Mansurak, in northeastern Seoul, as well as in Namyangju, Gyeonggi province, with online posts of the insects appearing on hiking trails, apartment walls, pipes, and even inside homes. These sightings suggest that they are expanding further out from their usual area of activities.
Love bugs were certainly a surprise when they appeared in swarms last year. Do we know what's behind the sudden surge in brown katydids this year?
Well, some experts point to changing temperatures as a possible reason for the increase. A previous study by the Rural Development Administration found when temperatures rise by 2.5 degrees Celsius, the egg-laying rate of brown katydids can increase by nearly 70%. The insect hatch in the spring and early summer after spending the winter as eggs underground, but their eggs can remain dormant for more than 2 years, raising the possibility of sudden outbreaks when the conditions become more favorable to them.
And meanwhile, it appears that reports of love bug infestations have sharply dropped this year. What were the key measures that helped bring down the love bug population?
Well, according to the Seoul Metropolitan Government, love bug-related complaints fell to some 1,500 only this year, a huge decline compared to over 5,000 last year. Officials believe early pest control measures, which we have covered in our previous Korea Trending segments, those include larval control, expanded trapping devices, and water spraying drones. These efforts all helped to prevent a major outbreak this year.
Right. I haven't been seeing love bugs this year. But now to our final story of the day. Dan, what do you have?
Universal Pictures announced that Oscar-winning director Christopher Nolan, loved and celebrated for works considered masterpieces by many such as Interstellar and Oppenheimer, will be visiting South Korea on August 3rd.
So some Hollywood action from Dan. Is this Nolan's first such trip to Korea?
Actually, this is his first time. Nolan is on a promotional visit to Korea. While some may see it as merely a part of promotional tours for his new film, The Odyssey, Korea has one of the strongest fan base for the director over the years, with his films drawing over 36 million viewers at cinemas. Fans in Korea celebrate Nolan's cerebral and at times complex works. While some fans may complain that it's unnecessarily complicated, people love to dig into it, share their own analysis and theories. Scenes and lines from the movies constantly being used as conversation starters or in creating countless memes.
Yeah, we were talking about this today before the show. I'm a fan of Oppenheimer, The Dark Knight, Interstellar, Dunkirk. What did Nolan say about his coming trip?
Nolan reportedly is fully aware of the fandom in Korea, and he tried but failed in the past several times to set up a visit to Korea due to scheduling conflicts and tight production timelines. The upcoming trip was initiated at the director's request, and he micromanaged and restructured his global promotion itinerary to clear space for Seoul and ensure adequate time to engage with Korean fans. Nolan even released a handwritten note for Korean fans expressing deep gratitude for the support and love and how excited he is to be coming to Seoul.
And what else can we expect from this promotional tour in Korea for the film Odyssey?
Well, Nolan will not be alone. He'll be leading a star-studded delegation that includes actors Matt Damon and Charlize Theron, the main cast of the big-screen adaptation of Homer's epic that deals with a hero's journey after the fall of Troy. For Damon, it's long-overdue return to Korea since the 2016 promotional tour for Jason Bourne. Theron is excited to be coming back to Korea for this press trip. She actually was on an unannounced personal vacation in South Korea with her daughter last November, spotted casually walking through the streets of Hongdae, and many doing double takes and assuming it was maybe AI, but it was really Charlize Theron herself. The trial will take part in major press conferences, fan interactions, and red carpet premieres.
Well, welcome back to Korea. And I also, of course, happen to be a big Matt Damon fan. So looking forward to this. But that's all we have for today's edition of Korea Trending. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you so much for having me.
Hi, I'm Austin Dean, first baseman for the LG Twins, and you are now listening to Korea 24 on KBS World Radio.
Time now for Sports Roundup, your weekly look at all the action from the big wins and tough losses to the stories on and off the field. Joining us now on the line to help us do that is Yuji Ho, the sports writer for Yonhap News. Gio, great to have you here again on the show.
Yeah, it's great to be here too.
The 2026 KBO League season is entering the All-Star break, but we have some big games coming up this week before the teams press pause on the season, including a series between the Twins, the LG Twins, that is, and the Samsung Lions, the top two teams as of today. Gio, give us a preview of that and the other games this week before the break.
Yeah, so that's going to be the one series to keep an eye on this week. The two best teams in the league at the moment, the LG Twins in first place, the Samsung Lions in second place. They're pretty close to each other as we speak through Sunday's game. Samsung Lions, they were just one game behind the Twins. So depending on how the series goes, the Lions could be in first place entering the second half of the season. The Lions have played better of late. They've won 9 out of the past 10, 4 in a row. And the last time they were in first place was back on May the 29th. And the Twins have been in first place every day since overtaking Lions on May the 30th. So a big series coming up between these two teams. In the meantime, the KT Wiz have fallen behind those two rivals a little bit. They now have they've got to look at in the rearview mirror a little bit for the Kia Tigers. The Wiz are closer to fourth place than they are to second place. But the Wiz will have a chance to pull ahead as they host last place Kiwoom Heroes to close out the first half. The Tigers, in the meantime, they will visit the Lotte Giants for three games. The Tigers have gone 6-2-1, wins, losses, and ties against the Lotte Giants so far this year. Now, the free-falling SSU Landers, they're taking on the Doosan Bears, who are trying to stay in the top five picture ahead of the Hanwha Eagles. The Landers have lost 9 in a row. You know, they dropped 13 in a row earlier in the year. They're trying to avoid yet another double-digit losing streak this time. Finally, the Hanwha Eagles versus the NC Dinos. A game and a half separate these two teams. They're currently in 6th and 7th place.
I know the Lions have been playing well lately, and I've been also been enchanted by my Twins' new closer, Sun Ju-young. I've also been wondering what's going on with the Landers in Incheon. But Jiho, what else has stood out to you in the first half of the season?
Yeah, so team-wise, I think, you know, I'm a little surprised personally that the Lions have been this good despite a slow of their injuries. You know, they were considered among the favorites before the season, but then they lost a bunch of players to injuries even before the season began. But the ones that have been on the field have been really carrying the team so far. And I feel like the Twins are overachieving a little bit. You know, they've had some injuries of their own, especially to the pitching staff. You know, they lost their closer Yu Young-chan for one for the rest of the season. But like you said, Sun Ju-young, he's filling the converted starting pitcher. He's among the league leaders in saves right now. He's turned what could have been a weakness into a strength for the Twins team. The Kia Tigers are trying to get back into the postseason. You know, they won the title 24, missed out on October baseball entirely last year with several key players out with injuries. But they're proving, I think, when they're healthy, they're forced to be reckoned with. Now, the Landers, I mean, where do we even start? You know, they've had a pretty decimated pitching staff all year. They've got next to nothing from their foreign pitchers. They've gone through a lot of them. You know, like I said, 13-game losing streak earlier, 9-gamer this year, this week as we speak. You know, they're in 9th place. They've gone, they've fallen from all the way from 2nd to 9th place in a matter of weeks, really. So, they might even actually end up hitting the rock bottom at some point.
Right. That's unfamiliar territory for the Landers, I would say. But let's also talk about some of the stars from the first half of the season, including, of course, Austin Dean.
Yeah. Dean of, I guess, your LG Twins, right?
Yes.
He's having an MVP-worthy season. You know, no Twins player has ever won a league home run title. Most likely because they play more than half the games at Jamsil Stadium, which is the largest one in the league. But he's currently leading the way with 27 dingers. He's also among the leaders in hits, batting average, runs, slugging, on base, and also OPS. Now, the one man who did win MVP before, back in 2024, was Kim Do-young of the Tigers. He's back in his superstar form. Once again, contending for MVP. He's just one behind Dean in homers, 3rd in OPS, and 2nd in slugging. You know, Kim Do-young played only 30 games last year. He's 114. While dealing with 3 separate hamstring injuries, this year he's healthy. He's proving what he can do if he can just stay on the field. Now, among the pitchers, Doosan Bears right-hander Cha Min-seok is having a breakout campaign in his sophomore season. He leads the KBO in ERA with a 2.33, tied for the lead with 9 victories. Now, Ryu Hyun-jin, on the other hand, he's turning back the clock a little bit for the Eagles. 2.67 ERA, 8 wins at the age of 39 to really keep his Eagles team in the hunt.
It's just so fascinating. Ryu's been around for like 2 decades. So I think everyone's been beyond amazed at what he's been doing this season. But now we turn again to the crisis of the Korean sports world in the aftermath of Korea's elimination from the group stage at the FIFA World Cup. The Ministry of Culture, Sports, and Tourism has put together a new committee on reforming the sport in Korea. Gio, give us more details on this K-Football Innovation Committee.
Yeah, so Minister Choi Hee-young and former national team captain Park Ji-sung, they're named as co-chairs, co-heads of this new committee. They had their first meeting earlier today, and then before the start of the first meeting, Minister Choi actually ceded his role as a co-chair to Ryu Seung-min, the National Olympic Committee president. So it's going to be Ryu Seung-min, a former table tennis Olympic champion, and Park Ji-sung, of course, a World Cup hero from 2002. They're going to be leading the charge. They're joined by some other members, including a KFA executive director Kim Seung-hee and a couple of former national team players, Lee Yeon-pyo and Park Ju-ho. You know, they plan to have extensive discussions on ways to help bolster Korean football's competitiveness. They're going to look at football governance, youth development, and also adopting new technologies, among other things. Now, this committee, the formation of this committee comes after the ministry announced plans to carry out an audit into operations at the KFA. They're going to publish a white paper based on the findings. And of course, there's a bit of a leadership vacuum right now with head coach Hong Myeon-bo having resigned, and also KFA president Jung Mong-gyu, who had already said he was going to step down after the World Cup, but he decided to actually quit today, earlier today, submit his resignation letter. So they've got no leader at this point at KFA and no leader for the men's national team.
I know that Lee Yeon-pyo and Park Ju-ho have been some of the more critical voices of what went on within the association before the World Cup. So good luck to the committee. But let's now cover some action on the field. The K-League, of course, has resumed play after the World Cup break. FC Seoul won their third straight match to open up an 8-point lead at the top of the tables. Gio, give us the latest.
Yeah, so FC Seoul pretty much picking up where they left off. They're edging out Incheon United 1-0 at home on Sunday behind Chung Seung-won's first goal of the season. So FC Seoul now, they're sitting at 35 points, leading Ulsan HD FC by 8 points through 60 matches, just about halfway point of the season. Gangwon FC also have 27 points, equal with Ulsan, but they trail Ulsan by 2 in goals scored, which is the first tiebreaker in the K-League. Ulsan settled for a 1-0 draw against Gwangju FC on Sunday. So Gwangju, they're winless in 14 matches, 4 draws and 10 losses. They're in last place by 7 points. We'll most likely suffer direct relegation at this point to the K-League 2 for 2027. Kimcheon Sangmo FC, they're the team that right above, they sit right above Gwangju FC right now. They had a 1-1 draw against Jeju SK FC to remain without a victory in 5 straight matches.
Perhaps the K-League can serve as a good mood changer for Korean football. But now we turn to basketball, where the Korean men's national team is trying to make it to the next year's FIBA Basketball World Cup. The team suffered their third straight loss, however, in the Asian qualifiers. Gio, tell us more about the team's performances.
Yeah, so Korea lost to Chinese Taipei 80-80 in overtime on Friday. This is a Group B action of the Asian qualifying tournament for the FIBA Basketball World Cup. Korea led by as many as 19 points late in the third quarter, but they could not stay in front. They dropped their record to 2-3 with one final game against Japan coming up later tonight out in Goyang. So this group has Korea, Japan, Chinese Taipei, and China. The top three from each of the four groups in this current phase will advance to the next round. Now, as things stand, Korea they're in third place behind Japan and Chinese Taipei. Japan has already qualified for the next phase. If Korea loses to Japan, they will be eliminated. Even if Chinese Taipei and Korea finish tied in points, then Chinese Taipei will hold a tiebreaker edge because they won both of the meetings between these two countries already. So Korea has lost all three games under their new head coach, Nicolas Mazours, who is still looking for his first win as a bench boss for Team Korea.
Maybe just 2026 is not the year for World Cups and Korea, but wishing the Korean men's basketball national team the best, nevertheless, in their remaining game. But that's it for today's sports roundup. That was Yoo Ji-ho of Yonhap News. Thank you, Gio.
Okay, thanks for having me.
And this is where we wrap up today's show. Again, you can always listen to Korea 24 on various apps, KBS Kong, KBS World Radio, and KBS World Radio on air at 7:10 p.m. Korea Standard Time every weekday. We'll be back tomorrow. I've been your host, Andrew Jung. Thank you for listening, and bye.
KBS World Radio.